I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month.
I pressed a button on the side. Is that still okay?
You're in so much trouble. Everything is broken and the podcast is canceled.
No. Okay.
Hello and welcome to Witch Please, a podcast about the Harry Potter world. That's not.
I took out Fortnightly.
It's true. We're not Fortnightly anymore.
No, that's a lie. Just a podcast. I could put in the word occasional.
A sometime podcast. Your sometime podcast about the Harry Potter world. Hello and welcome to Witch Please, a podcast about the Harry Potter world. I'm Marcel Cosman.
And I'm Hannah McGregor.
Do you want me to do that again?
No, it was perfect.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right.
All of this is going in. I'm not editing anything out of this episode.
That's going to be Rogue Witch Please. We just don't edit anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Fuck it.
We are so excited to be back. Yeah! But we have some news. Hannah, would you like to break the news?
I would like to break the news. We had a really lovely hour-long check-in before we started recording today about sort of where we're at in our lives and also in relation to this project. And after some hard inward looking and an agreement that one day we will make another podcast together, we've decided that for now, this is going to be the last season of Witch Please. We love this podcast a lot, and we love our community of listeners a lot, but it's getting harder and harder for us to sustain it, and it's getting harder and harder to sort of keep the momentum up. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think we just really miss doing a podcast where we read books.
Yeah. Yeah. For a project that Hannah is doing, I filled out a survey for her, and I was, during our check-in at the beginning, I was telling Hannah how nostalgic and delighted I was reminiscing about the early, early, early episodes of this podcast when we didn't, like, when nobody listened to it, and we just kind of, you know, we just got together and did silly things and had silly conversations, and then the world mm-hmm. got, like, super real, and...
Yeah, it's hard. Ugh. It feels hard at this particular moment to make a silly podcast. And a lot of what made Which Please really special originally had to do with us living in the same city. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel here while we're doing just a heartfelt check-in, I feel a little bit worried that without Which Please, we'll just never talk anymore.
Oh my God.
So can we make sure that isn't true?
Yeah, I think that we could spend more time doing things that we don't have to edit later.
It just occurred to me that it's possible to have a friendship that you don't record and then edit sound effects into.
We could have like scheduled movie dates and
yeah, everybody just come look for us on Twitter where we'll be live tweeting various bad movies.
Yeah, if you didn't see us live tweeting 50 Shades Grayer, let me tell you, you missed a wild night. I can't wait until we do 50 Shades Freer.
Okay. But we are back for one last season, which we have lovingly named Which Please Gone Rogue. Because if it's our last season, we can just do whatever crazy shit we want. Like, barely edit an episode.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And we also, you know, during our heartfelt check-in, we also talked about the fact that, you know, like, nobody can predict the future. We might do a Witch Please reboot. We might just, like, read the entire New Canadian Library series and give big thumbs down to every book.
Two thumbs down to Canlit, the podcast. Yeah. Can tell us how to spell, and we'll make a Canlit podcast. Yeah, no, I mean, I would love, you know, in a couple of years when our lives have gotten calmer, that's a hilarious joke. just start over again and reread all the Harry Potter books again.
Yeah, I think so.
So we are here today to talk not about the end of the podcast, but about, I was looking for some parallelism and I don't have it. But about
the end of our time
friendship.
As oh my God.
Oh no.
That's real.
Not about endings, but about beginnings. The beginning of this new season, this rogue season.
The beginning of our time as people who have actually been to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Which we have, and we are.
Mm-hmm.
We did it. We did it because of you, dear listeners.
Oh my God, yes.
Who made it possible. We went for 2 days in February,
mm-hmm.
which was very smart because it was neither excruciatingly hot nor was it particularly crowded.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I think that we did this in a very smart way. So we had one day that was like a big, exciting group affair, mm-hmm. with the baby hippogriff and Nana hippogriff. and our friends, Raimi and Steph, and our friend and Witch Please listener. I guess, I mean, maybe Raimi and Steph listen to Witch Please. I don't know.
Did you? Oh, they do.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And also friend and Florida native Julie, who was our guide.
Mm-hmm.
We went as a great big, hilarious, fun crew on day one, which was absolutely delightful and also meant that we successfully saw very little of the park.
Oh, definitely. But we had such a gay old time.
Emphasis on the gay.
Just the biggest, gayest time.
Yeah, it was really, really magical. And what you're going to hear in this episode will include some pieces from a pretty cash conversation that Marcel and Julia and I recorded that very night.
My name is Julie Francis. I am a Florida native. I grew up in Miami. My parents are Cuban, which is very typical of Miami. And because of that, I've been to the park several times. And was really excited to go to the parks with the Witch Please crew. We ended up going to the parks together, because I've been listening to the podcast for a very long time. One of my best friends, Bridget Semler, recommended it to me. And I saw you guys in Tufts about a year ago. and we met. It was amazing. And I'd let you guys know that I'm from Florida, and a lot of people from Florida know someone who knows someone who can, you know, get discounted tickets to the parks or like whatever. And that if you ever wanted to come to the parks, to hit me up. And then back in June of 2017, I moved to Miami, back home. I was living in Boston at the time that the Tufts lecture happened. And I told you, it was like, I moved back to Miami. If you, you know, if you ever want to come to the parks, let me know. And I think you said the GoFundMe project was happening and that it was very much gonna happen. Yeah. and when was a good time to go to the parks? And so we just started corresponding about good times, and here we are in February. It's happening. It's February. It's 80 degrees Fahrenheit in Florida.
For our lovely British and Canadian listeners, that means it hit over 30 degrees today in February, which was baffling. But we just came. We spent a really lovely day at the park. Me and Marcel and Julie and Elliot and Marcel's mom/Elliot's Elliot's Nana, Christine, as well as some old friends of Marcel's and now of mine, Rami and Steph, who in fact are from Boston, which is really funny because the time I met them was also that Tufts trip. So it's a very small world, and it all came together really beautifully. Rami and Steph flew down, Julie drove up, and we had a real ride, just a group party at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter today.
I was super drunk.
Yeah. It was like mostly Julie and I sat down to talk about it, and then Marcel would occasionally shout comments from the end of the couch.
Like, I threw myself drunkenly down on the couch and was like, let me talk about feminism.
There is something especially joyful about going to a theme park based on a thing that you really love with a bunch of really, like, rabid and furious feminists. It is a really profoundly beautiful and thrilling experience, and is a treasure in terms of proving the point that furious, furious, angry, rabid feminists have so much fun and just like love things so deeply. And we are so silly, and we are so silly when we're together. And I just wish people could be more cool about feminism, mm-hmm. because we are so fun. Yeah. We have such a good time. It was so great.
Which I think is the original spirit of this podcast anyway.
I think so. Yeah. Before one of us got pregnant.
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't.
Buzzkill.
Wasn't before.
Ooh. He's fine. He's great.
Whew. He's doing amazing.
He's doing amazing. Yeah, so then on the second day, we went back, just you and I, mm-hmm. and
that was
systematically worked our way through the whole park.
It was so special. Oh my God.
Really, it was really, really, really special. It was such a great day. I loved getting to spend a whole day just with you. It felt like an incredible treat and an incredible privilege. My favorite part of that whole day is that there's very little in the park that Marcel and I can eat. So we mostly just ate the like cheap refillable buckets of popcorn.
So much popcorn.
So much popcorn. And then tried to drink enough water to offset the dehydration caused by that popcorn. So at the end of the day, we exited the park into this like weird mall area, like this outdoor mall that has all of these like American mega restaurants that mm-hmm. could seat like 4,000. And we went into this random Mexican restaurant mm-hmm. That had a live mariachi band, which was just a lot, very yeah. overstimulating. And we ordered the veggie fajitas for two because mm-hmm. we're cute.
Aww.
And then we ordered the special guac that's made at your table. And there was this moment where this lovely young man came over and started to make us fresh guacamole at the table. And Marcel began to weep.
with sheer joy.
Oh my God, it was really just
such
like
a good day.
It was the best day of my life. Anybody who knows me on Twitter knows that I've recently started taking antidepressants, and that was after about a year of being in like deep denial that I was actually depressed. And this trip was capped off with this incredibly magical, beautiful excursion with just like my beautiful friends in Harry Potter world, and then this like spectacularly tender, beautiful, magical day with just my beautiful friend Hannah, and it was just a lot. I think that could have been such a different trip if Raimi and Steph and Julie and my mom hadn't been so completely and totally willing to just do whatever.
So chill.
Just like, sure, where do you need to go? Would you like to go here? Sure, let's go over here. Oh, you need to go to the bathroom again? Okay, no problem. We'll just wait here. Don't worry about it. And
God,
it just made it
was so cool.
It just made it so easy.
Everybody was just so cool about everything. Yeah. Everybody was just like, nobody got stressed. Nobody was trying to like control the shape of the day or impose expectations. Like everybody just arrived there in this spirit of like, let's just have a nice day in a fun park with our friends. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and then it was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a magical 2 days.
Magical. Magic is real. Is the
magic away. Is real. So to sort of try to bring you along on this very magical journey that we went on, we are going to talk about what we saw and what we did. And we're going to talk about it in order of how we actually experienced the park.
Okay, so let's start in Hogsmeade. We entered Hogsmeade over a bridge, and all of a sudden, the like steamy jungle of Jurassic Park turned into a snow-capped winter village with a castle looming in the distance.
And there's music playing.
And there was music, that's right.
Yeah.
And we were all of a sudden like in Hogsmeade.
Something about like you want to go into the world, right? You want to be able to put yourself into that world. And part of that immersion that I noticed you noticing a lot today and commenting on a lot today was the music. Is that something you've noticed a lot before? Is that something you're noticing particular today?
I think I've always noticed the music in the parks is one, because before you get to Harry Potter World, there's a Jurassic Park part, and like it's John Williams and then John Williams, right? Like I think the music has always like been something special for me in cinema, because I also really love Lord of the Rings, and the music for Lord of the Rings is really incredible. And I think that it's like a nostalgia, right? Like when you're walking through the parks and you hear the music that you remember from the movies, and the movies remind you of your experience of the book, it just like all like comes together and this like welling of emotion. Like when we were in Ollivander's, right, there's like this whole like experience where they kind of recreate that scene from the movie of like Harry getting the wand, but it's like the actor picks somebody in your group to get this wand, and it's not like there's like a like lighting effects and there's little like cute things happening, like physical things happening in the set, but it's really like the music welling up that like gives you the goosebumps and like makes you tear up a little bit, you know? So I think that the music is a very powerful thing that they really lean on in the parks.
I mean, it's a little coercive at times, but it also just works really well because that score is fucking killer, right? I did not real like I just I'm you know I'm dumb and I don't know about things, and so I didn't know that they were both the same, that Jurassic Park and Harry Potter were the same, the score was written by the same person.
Possibly make you dumb. You are not a musicologist.
I'm not a musicologist. Only Steve is a musicologist. There's only one musicologist, and that's all that's allowed on this podcast or in the world. But that moment, that was like one of my favorite moments today, was we passed by Jurassic Park to get to Hogsmeade, and there's this wooden bridge, which is like behind you is the like tropical jungle Jurassic Park with those super iconic electrified fences and like the dun 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 dun, and then there's a wooden bridge, and then all of a sudden it's like these old Victorian row houses of Hogsmeade with the snow and the like old metal sort of wrought fence and do-do-do-do-do. And it's like right in between. It's just like this short bridge in between them, which was like, oh, would that I could live on this bridge forever. I fucking love Jurassic Park so much. My God. Oh, so exciting. They do such an incredible job of creating like an immersive experience to a degree that I didn't think would be possible given how many other tourists there are walking around. Mm-hmm. Like you would think all of the park guests would really sort of take something out of it, but mm-hmm. the quality, I mean, just the quality of like the set, the buildings, the various staff walking around in costume, the music, right? The soundtrack playing as you cross the bridge, the smells.
Yeah, Julie had given us a heads up that it was going to smell incredible, I think. And it did. And it was just stellar. And one of the first things that happened that was so spectacular was that we were trying to do magic at one of the mm-hmm. windows. And I think it's a testament to like how splendid the park actually mm-hmm. is that I remember this so fondly.
We didn't have our own wands yet, but Julie had one.
No.
Had two. Julie has two wands.
That's right.
And had brought them so that we could play with them.
That's right. And we were trying to figure out how to do it. And then a man came over and tried to explain how to do it. And he had no idea what he was talking about.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a park staff member. It was just a man. Just some man came over and tried to show us how to do it and was wrong.
Was very wrong. He was actually like giving us instructions like, oh, you need to like look at that thing and do like you need to look for the sensor and point it at the sensor. And I think that Julie went and got a staff person. And then they came and helped us and showed us how to do it. And then we did magic and the man was wrong. And then we had a good hearty chuckle.
So Hogsmeade, from what I understand from Julie, this is why she argued for doing it in this direction. And we did things in the opposite direction on the second day. But Hogsmeade was built first. Mm. So Hogsmeade and Hogwarts Castle were the first part of the Wizarding World. And then later on, they built Diagon Alley. Oh, let's talk about you want to talk about the rides a little bit?
Sure.
Because I didn't know that there would be rides. That was a real surprise to me. I feel like for context here, I looked up absolutely nothing. Julie offered to be our guide.
It's in keeping with the theme of our podcast.
I need to add some context, which is like 3 minutes ago, Marcel rolled up and is sitting on the end of the unbelievably long couch in our Airbnb, just like throwing in some tips from afar.
Do you want to stay with us?
No, she doesn't. She doesn't. She only wants to...
Want to intervene.
Yeah, she just wants to intervene from afar. Yeah, you're right. It is completely in keeping with the theme of our podcast. No research ever.
No.
But it's okay to bring in experts. And so that's what you're here for. Yeah, you're a Harry Potter Park expert. So I was super surprised by the rides. And I was wondering if you could reiterate to people a little bit about the sort of order in which the parts of the Harry Potter were built and sort of how that impacted like what the rides are like as well, because you kind of have a theory that might just be facts. What's the difference between a theory and facts, really? That's my question.
Okay, so like I said earlier, Hogsmeade was built first. I don't know if at that point they had a plan to build Diagon Alley, but yeah, so Hogsmeade was first. So you can use wands in the park to kind of like do little magical things, like make water come out of a fountain or make these little trolls dance, just like all these little things. When Hogsmeade was built, the wands did not do any of that. It was just kind of like a set. There was Honeydukes, there was Zonkos, you can go buy things. And then the castle was there. The castle hasn't changed since they opened it. They just kind of like added that wand feature to like the rest of Hogsmeade. And there's one ride in the castle where you're referred to as a muggle, which we think, well, so when we go to Diagon Alley, we're referred to as muggle-borns. And there's a lot more like trying to include us as like wizards or witches into the park. I think that's like why they added the wand thing later too. I think there was like maybe a lot of crowdsourcing about like, hi, how do you feel about this park? We're going to build another one. So yeah, Hogsmeade was definitely like the beta run. And then they built Diagon Alley next, and it was just like everything you wanted. It's incredible.
So Hogsmeade is comparatively fairly simple. So there's a few different things you have there. There's a sort of small version of a wand shop there where you can mm-hmm. buy a wand, but most people recommend holding out to go to Ollivander's in Diagon Alley. There's, what's the name of the restaurant?
Is it the
Three Broomsticks there, or is it the...
It must be the Three okay. Broomsticks. Yeah.
Which is lovely and big. And there's like, the candy shop.
Right. Zonko's is the joke shop. Honeydukes.
Yes, Honeydukes. Yeah, so like the stuff that you would encounter in Hogsmeade. Mm-hmm. And some sort of touristy like shops where you can buy things. Mm-hmm. And then the station for the Hogwarts Express. And of course, the castle.
Of course. Yeah. We went on the castle ride. Mm-hmm. Escape from Hogwarts.
So the two rides that we went on today were the, what are they called? The Hogwarts, an adventure, and then Gringotts, an experience. I made up the same.
Escape from Gringotts.
And Hogwarts, what? The ride in the castle. Castle ride. Go.
The hardcore fans are screaming.
That I hope so. God, all I want is to say wrong things and be yelled at on Twitter for them. JK, LOL.
And it was...
So, for those of you who haven't gone, the whole interior, like, if you want to go into Hogwarts, you go on the ride. There's an mm-hmm. option, so there's a whole lot of it where you're just, like, walking through hallways and, like, walking past stuff, and there's, like... some sort of projected mini scenes that create backstory for what's going to happen on the ride. And, you know, you pass mm-hmm. by. It's a lot of sort of built sets as you go through. I mean, this is the thing that these theme parks are famous for, is like they make the line themselves part of the experience, so that as you're standing in line, you're like, oh, I'm in the greenhouse and now I'm going into like, so you get that part of the experience. And I guess the other nice thing about it is that right up until the point where you would get right onto the ride, people who aren't going to ride can still participate. Mm-hmm. So you can go right up to there, and then there's a part where you can sort of just step off. And that's mm-hmm. good for like people who have small children, or people who don't like rides, or who have disabilities, or as I read all about in Jess Baker's new book, Land Whale, if you are too fat to go on the rides, because they also have a size limit. And she has a really incredible chapter where she writes about going to the Wizarding World and being too fat to go on the Wizarding rides, which I'm kind of delighted I didn't read about until after, because I feel like if I had that in my mind as a possibility, that would have really stressed me out.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But that thing, like that sort of harness thing that locks into place, like that's mm-hmm. size specific, right? Anyway, so the castle itself is like all kind of part of that ride, but you can see it either way. And it was cool. Mm-hmm. It was really hard to take pictures because it was very dark in there.
Yeah, the fact that there were things to do and look at while in line mm-hmm. was awesome, because otherwise, like, lines are excruciating. Everybody hates lines. But the idea of waiting like 120 minutes in line for a 5-minute ride in like, I don't know what this would be in Fahrenheit, but like 36 degree steamy Florida swamp heat.
Yeah, no, it's like, rough. So the ride itself, do you remember the narrative behind the ride itself? Because they are attempting, it's a Quidditch match. That's what we're being. As we go, right. We see various characters talking about the upcoming Quidditch match. And it's obviously Gryffindor versus Slytherin. And mm-hmm. it's like, who's going to win the Quidditch match? And there's like, we see different characters. It's like sort of projected... like holographs of like the actual actors from the movies, from what I could tell, mm-hmm. for the most part, you know, saying like, oh, this Harry, he's a real up and comer.
That's a direct quote.
I took notes. It was really interesting that they had so many actors in the park or staff members, but nobody played any characters.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, which is a really interesting sort of, I think a through line was a reminder of the degree to which the park is based on the movies, not on the mm-hmm. books. And this mm-hmm. this sort of devotion to like, the original actors play the roles of these characters. They are these characters. It would totally sort of fuck with that that impression if you just dressed somebody else up like Hagrid. And so you only see projections of the actual characters, and everybody who's physically in the park is just like a random witch or wizard. Yeah, so the story of the ride was something like something something Quidditch match. And then we, the players, are the players, the riders,
mm-hmm.
are Muggles.
That's right.
Who are visiting Hogwarts somehow. And yeah. have been called upon to help win the Quidditch match. Does this sound true?
This sounds familiar, yeah.
It's quite hard to follow.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially yeah. if you're, like, busy being thrilled, you know?
Yeah. I can't pay attention to your narrative.
I'm being thrilled.
So, yeah. So, the idea is that somebody casts, I think it's Hermione, casts a spell on you that temporarily lets you fly a broom. Mm-hmm. And so in the ride, you are like supposed to feel like you're on a broom, flying around, and you're basically like seated. It's a kind of roller coaster-ish thing, but you're seated side by side instead of facing somebody else, which means that there's nobody right in front of you. So it's just you looking straight at the various projections, and then it moves you around as though you're on a broom. It's just sort of like you're basically in a fairly small amount of space, but the combination of the way that the movement works and the sort of projections that they're placing around you gives you a very visceral impression that you are like first flying around the Quidditch field and then eventually flying around Hogwarts as a whole.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way that I think about the shape of the ride that we were on is it reminds me as though I've been there, of the Whomping Willow.
Because
you're sort of on a branch being thrown around, but you're not, you're always anchored in place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely made me feel a little nauseous in a way that the Gringotts Bank ride didn't make me feel nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was in part because like in the Gringotts Bank, we'll talk about this more, but you're like on a roller coaster. And so it's like you can see the car in front of you.
Right.
And there's more of a physical, real physical anchor. But in a Hogwarts castle, like there's the you know, seat that you're on, but there's nothing in front of you to look at that's real.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gave me a little bit more sort of vertigo. But that was kind of exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're swooping around wildly. It's like kind of thrilling.
Yeah. I definitely preferred the Hogwarts ride to the Gringotts ride.
Interesting.
Yeah. I found it more fun.
So the rides are surprisingly, not surprisingly, just similar, which is what you, Julie, described as a combination of like a traditional ride in simulation. And I was like, what does that mean? And you were like, I'll wait and see, which was very coy. But what that means is that like you're strapped into a thing. There were like these big screens in front of you that were sort of producing both physical and psychological effects.
Yeah.
It is too... Yeah, please take this away.
So... from
emotional.
From what I understand, Universal has like patented the way these rides work. There's like a special screen, the way like it's half roller coaster, half simulation ride. When you go to Disney, when you go to Busch Gardens, any of them, they don't have that technology. And that's one of the reasons why you're not allowed to bring like cameras or any of those things on the ride. Like specifically, it's not just like, oh, don't bring items because you're going to lose them. It's like, do not bring a camera. Do not record this. Like, because it's like coveted technology like within like the theme park realm. So yeah, it is kind of like a special experience. It's hard to describe if you haven't been there. Because you can't, it's not really anywhere else. Yeah. But yeah, you do, it's like the ride is in the castle. It doesn't go like outside. So when you're going into the park, you kind of pass the Hulk, which is a big roller coaster. Like it's huge. You see it happening. Like you see people riding it. When you do, you would not know that there's a ride inside the castle just walking by it. So how they managed to make that work is beyond me and part of the magic of the parks, right? But yeah, so you kind of like move through the space, but like not too far outside of the space. So yeah, it's like half roller coaster, half simulation. Sometimes you're moving, sometimes it's just a screen. Marcel has something to add.
Do I want to join you?
No, I just want to interject from afar. And when you were describing it, Julie, what struck me was the fact that the way that you described the secret rides inside these structures mirrors the way that there's like a secret wizarding world hidden inside of the muggle world, and how just looking at the outside, you'd be like, that's a weird looking building. Well, whatever's in there is probably nothing to think about. And, but yet you go inside and there's adventure and magic. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, now that you're back, let's get on the Hogwarts Express and go to Diagon Alley.
Yeah, we're doing it. Undoubtedly the best part. Woo-hoo! All aboard, etc. Undoubtedly the best part of the Hogwarts Express on day one was Elliot's delight.
I know. He just, like, he loves methods of transportation so much.
He sure does.
And was so excited about what he calls the GO train. He I don't know why it is that he calls them GO trains and not choo-choo trains. It's not an Ontario thing because we don't live in Ontario. He just refers to GO trains. He just refers to all manner of trains as GO trains.
Yeah. It's very cute. So he was really stoked for the Hogwarts GO train.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As were we all. And it's wonderful because it is an actual train.
Yeah.
Like it comes up to you. Like you wait at the station and then the train comes up and it looks like the Hogwarts Express. And you get on it and you sit in the little compartments with the little seats that face each other. And there's, you know, like the luggage rack and like they really, there's so much attention to detail in every part of the park.
Yeah.
And then as the train is like physically relocating you from Hogsmeade to Diagon Alley, there's projections, again, sort of images on the windows on both sides. So you've got sort of the window looking out and then the window into the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And in the window into the aisle, you'll have like sort of silhouettes of characters doing stuff and having conversations, and then in the window out there'll be sort of stuff happening in the English countryside that obscures the actual probably like Florida parking lot that you're passing by. Yeah, so we got off in Diagon Alley.
I loved Diagon Alley.
Or rather, technically we get off in platform 9 3/4.
That's right.
Oh, and you emerge into London, because that is accurate. Yeah, no, I think the exit's actually out of King's Cross Station. So it's part of the like London corner in the main park, which has all of this London stuff and has the night bus. Okay. And then if you want to walk into Diagon Alley, you do so through the like cool illusion brick wall. Yeah, so the night bus is there.
Yes.
Also to the great delight of Elliot.
Oh, my God. Hannah bought him a little miniature night bus, and he calls it his purple double-decker bus. And he knows that it's called the night bus, and this has helped him to realize that there are names for things, but that the name of things is not necessarily the same as its proper name. And so he'll often say, like, what's this bus called? He'll say, oh, it's the night bus.
Does he ever ask what, like, a city bus is called?
No, but he'll ask, like, other things. Like, what's the sheet called? Like, it's a bed sheet. Oh.
It's Henry. This is Henry, the bed sheet.
He names everything Humdy because Humdy is the name of his friend who changed daycares, and he misses Humdy and names everything Humdy.
No, that story's sad.
It's too sad. It's profoundly sad.
That's the saddest story I've ever heard. I miss you, Humdy.
Anyway.
Okay, so you emerge into London. And that's kind of cool because it's part of the park that's like a bunch of different major cities. Like there's a London and a New York. And so you're like in the park's actual London, but the park's actual London leads into Diagon Alley.
Yeah.
Just as sort of thinking back to like the point that Marcel just made about like the way that the Harry Potter world is both like part of Universal, but also kind of hidden, which is really interesting. And a point you made, Julie, was that the castle is built in such a way that, like, they really control how and when you see it. So it's, like, not really visible most of the time when you're walking around the rest of the park, and you have to, like, come upon it, and, like, it rises up above you, and it's this really clear attempt to sort of give you that magical experience of, like, when you're on the Hogwarts Express and the castle comes into view, and it's like, oh, the castle, which is so comparable to the climax of the studio tour in London, which is the final piece of it, is the scale model of Hogwarts that is the, like, their shooting model. So it's like the one complete actual version of Hogwarts that was used for, like, all overhead shots, that's like three stories high, full scale Hogwarts. And they, the, like, the whole thing is, like, designed around producing for you the moment of walking in and seeing it, and, like, how important those moments are. And, like, there's a very similar moment in how you, like, find Diagon Alley. Yeah. Yeah, they have these brick walls that are layered such that you can't see it until you can see it. And so it still produces for you. There's that kitty in the backyard. Oh, cancel everything. It's a kitty. It had little white feet and a stripy tail. It's to the right. Go get it. Go get that kitty.
You might have to unlock it.
God damn it, Julie. Yeah, like, producing those moments, the, like, possibility of reproducing for you those exciting moments of, like, stumbling upon things is, like, seems to be so much a part of the design of, like, how the world is built and how it's built in relation to the rest of Universal Studios. Is that where we were?
Studios and Islands of Adventure.
Oh, Islands of Adventure. My God.
Hogsmeade is in Islands of Adventure, and then Diagon Alley is in Studios, and that's why we had to take a train, the Hogwarts Express, between Islands of Adventure and Studios.
So the train was real, but the elevator was fake.
So I'm again interjecting from afar. I, when we got out of the train, was like, that was a pretend train ride. We obviously just went from, like, one end of this track to the other end of this track along the same platform. But that's not true. It's just that we weren't allowed to look outside because outside isn't actually the journey from one to the other. Yeah. But it was real, unlike the elevator.
Yeah, we were definitely moving from one part of the park to another part of the park.
Oh my God. That blows my mind more than the elevator not being... To learn that the train was real blows my mind more than learning that the elevator was fake.
And there you have the fundamental difference between me and Marcel. I believe in things.
Pisces.
Ugh, I don't even know what that means. Yeah, and so it's through this brick wall that I was super curious about how they were going to make the magic wall that leads into Diagon Alley work.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just an illusion wall. But fucking Diagon Alley. Oh my God.
Amazing.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Oh my God.
I just want to hang out there all the time. It smelled good.
There is a dragon that breathes fire on, like, the quarter hour.
It's on top of Gringotts, yeah. And it's, like, huge, and the fire that it breathes is so hot you can feel it below on the ground.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month. Yeah, so Diagon Alley is like, it's a series of shops just like Diagon Alley itself is. Mm-hmm. But they've done a really great job of also making it a series of experiences that are available in all kinds of different ways. So there's the Ollivanders has like a little sort of experience where somebody gets chosen and gets to go through the like, you know, having their wand choose them kind That's of experience. Right. Then there's the Gringotts ride built in. There's the dragon that breathes fire. Mm-hmm. There's musical acts that happen.
That's right. Yes. And there's Florian Fortescue's ice cream shop, which mm-hmm. doesn't have any vegan ice cream.
No, it sure doesn't. That's fine. I drank pumpkin juice. It was weird. It tasted like pumpkin.
It was a bit disappointing. I think that they could have had like a sorbet.
Come on. Yeah, and then there's, you know, a like an outdoor place where you could just like buy a beer and hang out. Mm-hmm. I think there was a there was also a restaurant there.
The Three Broomsticks the other one.
The Boars?
The Leaky Cauldron.
Leaky Cauldron.
Okay, thank God.
Maybe. Ooh. Who knows?
It's been a long time since we've read the books, people.
Yeah. Years. It's been years. Yeah, so like, you know, you can get food, you can get ice cream, there's other fun little shops that you can go into, and there's, you know, clothes and magical creature shop where you can buy stuffed toys. There's also the we didn't actually on our first day we didn't even get a chance to go into Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing. Such a great shop.
Yeah.
Amazing. But we went in on day two, and on day two is also when we got a chance to go into what's the scary part of Diagon Alley?
Nocturne Alley.
Yeah. Which is, of course, nocturnally. Mm-hmm. God damn it. Which is colder.
Oh, very, very.
They made it colder. It's fucking brilliant. But we'll. But the sort of, I guess the like main thing that we did on day one was go into Gringotts Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, when you ride the Gringotts ride, Escape from Gringotts, TM. you enter through Gringotts and the line is like in the bank, and like you get to see like little animatronic goblins, which I'm sure like we'll have a conversation about later. And kind of like there's like a whole like processing you into the bank. So there's a lot of foreshadowing where they tell you like the situation of like where like what you're about to enter into, and then you're like herded into what looks like an elevator. And what really happens is like you and like a group of people like go into this elevator, right? The door closes behind you, and then it looks like you're going down a ton of floors, and like the floor of the elevator starts moving. There's like video on the side of the elevator that like makes it look like you're going down, but really you're just in a room with a floor that's moving. And then the other side, when you're done, you get to the floor you want to be on, theoretically, the other side of the door opens, and then you go onto the ride. So really, you've just been in a room the whole time, and the floor is moving, and like other things are happening. But it feels like you've gone down a bunch of floors, like they've really perfected the art of simulating what so many things feel like.
I thought we went down.
It 1,000% felt like we were going down.
Yeah. Yeah, it super felt like we were going down, and I definitely thought we were going in down, and it wasn't until you were describing this to Marcel's mom that I was like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense, I guess, than just a bunch of extra space. Cool.
Cool, cool, cool. Yeah.
So that was pretty cool because you actually like, so you're in the bank itself and there are goblins and that's something.
Oh my God. Do we want to talk about the goblins now or do we want to talk about the goblins later?
Maybe we might as well talk about them now. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Then I guess Marcel. Oh.
So I don't even, I gotta be honest, I don't even have words for how weird it is to have seen those goblins so close in a mm-hmm. bank wearing their banking suits mm-hmm. with their long hooked noses and
yeah.
pointy ears and claws counting money.
And I remember thinking the last time I went, I had started listening to the podcast and I was like, I wonder what Hannah and Marcel would think of this. And it's so great to actually go with you guys and hear what you think of it. So yeah, so there's like the representation of the goblins and the way that the wizards treat the goblins in like the kind of like foreshadowing before you go into the ride. So before you go into the ride, there's like a little like holographic video scene, the Gringotts ride, sorry, with Bill Weasley talking to a goblin and just like treating the goblin like a child almost. Like he like takes the keys from the desk and like waves them above the goblin's head and the goblin's trying to like reach for them. Just like talking to the goblin like he's an idiot, which just really struck me as problematic. The first time I saw it and also the second time I saw it and like every time after that. So
all of the goblins featured prominently. There was like a money trading. It wasn't called a money lending shop. Money exchange. That was like, wink. There's a money lender. Marcel, make your joke and I will give you the mic. Shylock's Emporium, as Marcel called it, that has an animatronic goblin in it. And then when you go into Gringotts, it's a whole row of animatronic goblins on either side of you. And then eventually a goblin that is like an actor in prosthetics that's not there in real life, but is acting alongside Bill Weasley in Hollywood. Techno-future. It wasn't a film. It was like 3 degrees. 3 dimensions. To see up close the like intensity of the anti-Semitic sort of parodic nature of these creatures that are then further dehumanized by the fact that the park has decided to literally not have them be people
mm-hmm.
is really intense, so that they are just these sort of machinic extensions of the park mm-hmm. and of the bank in particular.
Yeah. And like the solution to this as a problem isn't to hire Semitic looking people to play the goblins. To play the bankers.
Oh.
The solution is to not draw on like vicious and aggressive racial stereotypes when you create characters. That's the solution.
It's a really good solution.
Yeah.
Lots of problems in the world do not have good solutions, but that one does.
Oh, thank you.
You did it.
I did it.
Yeah. So you walk right through Gringotts and you've got, you know, the goblins up at their sort of high desks, mm-hmm. doing their banking, and you're in this sort of marble, very, you know, it's very fancy, it's very opulent, it's got golden chandeliers and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through and you go into a like sort of behind the scenes, right? Like you That's go right. into the more dungeony part of Gringotts. And the backstory, literally all I can remember is you're trying to get some gold out or something. But also there's bad guys here, maybe? Hard to say.
Yeah, you gotta like run. and then we're on, because it's a sort of roller coaster-esque type of ride, we mm-hmm. like we're it's like the cart, right? The mine
yeah,
shaft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Cart. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me for as a ride design, because the mine shaft cart is already a lot like a roller coaster in the way mm-hmm. it's represented in the movie, so it makes perfect sense to have turned it into a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And so it is a roller coaster, but it's a relatively
The ride is designed very similarly to Hogwarts Castle. So it's a sort of relatively simple roller coaster, and you don't go outside of the castle. You sort of are on this track and then interacting with like holographs and shit that's around you.
That's right.
Yeah. Though both of the rides do have like, there's a part of the Hogwarts Escape from Hogwarts Castle. Is that what we decided it's called?
Escape from Hogwarts Castle and Escape from Gringotts Bank.
Okay, just escaping. Escape everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Hogwarts Castle one, like you get sprayed with water at some
point. That's right.
And in the Gringotts Bank, there's a dragon in the bank that you're escaping from, and like the fire is hot.
Yes.
So like there are sort of those added like sensations built into the ride. Yeah, but basically like Voldemort and
Bellatrix
are breaking into Gringotts while you're there, and Bill Weasley is like fighting them off, and like you're basically trying to avoid getting hurt by them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason why I found the Gringotts ride less enjoyable than
put off by the anti-Semitism.
I mean, maybe it just put me in a mood. Who knows? But I felt like that ride did a lot of stopping and watching a film. Do you know what I mean?
Good point. Yeah.
So like the Hogwarts one, even when you're sort of like being called a muggle by Draco Malfoy, you're still sort of, you're still being like shaken around. Whereas this one, you're in the mine cart and then all of a sudden you stop and you watch a movie for 30 seconds and then you go again and then you stop and you watch a movie for 30 seconds and then you go again. And I was like, are we on a ride or are we watching a movie? Like, which is it?
Make up your mind. Maybe that's why I liked Gringotts Bank a little bit more. And I think it's because there were little breaks that made me less nauseous.
See, there's something for everyone.
Something for everyone. Just depending on your queasiness level. I had a thought, and it was about immersion and fandom. Oh, you know what it was about? It was this and the Wizarding World and the studio tour are all about the movies. And that's not surprising because the movies visually branded the world in a way that the books didn't. And so when you're producing a theme park, like those visual brands are there available for you to sort of give people the sense of immersion. But I would be really curious what either or both of you imagine a book-based theme park or experience might look like. Like, how would that be different if it was based on the world of the books rather than the world of the movies?
Honestly, that's really hard to imagine because I feel like maybe the visual aspect of the movies is what unifies our experience of Harry Potter. Visually, you know, like we all see the castle and we all know it's the castle. Whereas like if I drew the castle and you drew the castle and Hannah drew the castle without any sort of like reference to the movie castle, it would be three different castles.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, whereas like we all see this castle in Hogsmeade, we know that's Hogwarts.
Yeah.
So I think that the movies kind of like uniformed the experience for us visually and even auditorially, sonically, I don't know what the right word is. Sonically.
Leftover garbage wine from the resort.
We're drinking cupcake Sauvignon Blanc and leftover garbage wine
from Disney World,
which we cannot talk about in the same sentence as Universal. They're going to come after us.
TM.
TM. Everything is TM. Don't sue us. Does that make sense that that it creates maybe like the movies created a visual language for us to interpret the Harry Potter world?
So I totally agree with you. I also think that we've talked about the casting and race a number of times, and I think that we can all agree that that was not done well, but the setting was done beautifully. And being at Universal's, for lack of a maybe more accurate term, physical manifestation of its movies was like incredible. Like so I was at another theme park that shall not be named. I was at the theme park that shall not be named for several days before coming to this one. And my takeaway experience from the whole thing has been that movie studios know how to make a goddamn theme park in a way that things that are not movie studios don't know how to make. Like rides aside, I'm not talking about rides in the like thrill experience, but in terms of the way in which you feel like you are part of that world is TM is yes. It's just somebody knocking on your door, handing you an envelope and saying, "You've been served." Yeah, I don't know how I'm ever going to go back to like a non-movie studio theme park.
Back to the shitty real world.
Back to the like trash real world. I have never almost cried for out of joy so many times in such a short span of time before my entire life. Like even like I love Elliot more than anything in the entire world, and having him was like a literally life-changing emotional experience on every possible way, but I didn't like, you know what? Maybe I did. I probably did. Whatever. So I would compare the last 5 days of going to film studio created theme parks that I feel very emotionally attached to as being akin to having a baby. In terms of the emotional ups and downs and the like incredible impact of feeling like there's still hope and goodness in the world.
The bank stuff was weird. Like it was, it was weird, and it's built into the world of the books and the movies itself. So like you obviously, it's not like the park invented this shit, but being immersed in it and being up close and personal with the goblin characters was definitely a like an experience.
When you were more soberly talking with Julie than me, do we know if the park is planning to build any extensions? Like, will there be more rides in the future? Because I remember being surprised that there were so few.
I believe so. Julie was saying that there had originally been a third ride that was called the Dueling Dragons that I think maybe predated even Hogsmeade and was already built as a roller coaster that you're on one of two different sides and the roller coasters like come at each other and that they kept as a like, oh, this makes sense within the Wizarding World context. It's about dragons. But they have closed that ride down. And my understanding is that they are building a new ride. Let me just Google this right now.
Ooh, research. Rogue. Which please goes rogue.
Which please goes rogue. New ride on the way for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. A new attraction will be added to the Hogsmeade section of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and is set to be one of the, quote, most highly themed coaster experiences.
What is that?
This ride will replace Hogsmeade's Dragon Challenge, a double roller coaster experience. God, calling things experiences. I know I already called things experiences, but it's really fucked up. Yeah. It's coming this fall.
Ooh.
It's being described as a new generation of thrill ride and will feature a new level of storytelling during the experience. It means they're going to stop and make you watch movies for sure.
Well, yeah. We'll have to go back.
It will feature Wizarding World characters and creatures and, quote, a few surprises along the way.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they are building a new one. But in general, that, I mean, the park as a whole, like Universal Studios is not, it's not Six Flags. Like you're not there for the rides. There are a few rides in each of the different areas, but like it's mostly sort of sets and cool stuff and street shows and, you know, shops. And like, it's mostly that kind of stuff with like the occasional ride if you feel like it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool because like if you are there and don't like rides, there's still so much to do.
Yeah, definitely. Like I had never been to a theme park before. I'd been to a number of amusement parks and I'm a big fan of amusement parks.
Love to be amused.
I love it. I love amusement. But I also, it turns out, love themes.
I know we've already talked about this, but like, I, as the ironic, joyless, millennial feminist that I am, I don't like things. Like, I was just, I was really, I was, that's not true about me as a person at all. But like, I just, like, I thought it would require some sort of a deliberate suspension of my own innate suspicion and irony. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously, you know, we've hit on a few moments that stopped us up, but mm-hmm. for the most part, I was just along for the ride. Like, I was just yeah. so, I was like, this is delightful. I love everything.
Yeah. I've never been on vacation somewhere before and had such a profound desire to return before I'd even left.
Yeah, I'd go back.
Yeah. All I could think about the whole time I was there was, I can't wait to come back. I can't wait.
That's great. I really want to go to Disney World now.
Oh my God, Hannah. Yeah. You will love it.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Meet you.
You'll
there.
Love it.
So that was about the end of our first day there. Mm-hmm. We were coming on park closing time. I think we actually stayed until the park closed.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, they kicked us out of Diagon Alley. We did not have the chance to go into Nocturne Alley that day, mm-hmm. Which was part of why we hadn't been totally sure if we would go back the next day. But we were mm-hmm. like, okay, we literally missed stuff. So.
Yeah.
So we headed out that first day and decided to go back, just you and I, mm-hmm. on day two. Day two, we also made the decision that we didn't redo either of the rides.
That's right.
We decided to just really spend as much time as we wanted in the actual sort of spaces and in all the shops. Mm-hmm. And day two, we also decided to start with Diagon Alley.
That's right.
And do sort of that direction of the journey instead.
Yeah. And I remember as we were walking through the park, we were observing how all of the different areas are kind of laid out mm-hmm. and how, I don't remember exactly like the phrasing that we used, but how sort of naturalized it was because it was sort of like the city areas. So there's the like San Francisco area and the Boston area and mm-hmm. the London area, and then in as part of the London area
yeah
is the entrance into Diagon Alley, and how like just convincing it was that mm-hmm. all of these like completely different franchises are like mushed together but in a way that doesn't feel weird.
Yeah, it's really well done. And I think part of it is that not everything is a franchise area. So there's like mm-hmm. the Marvel area and the Jurassic Park area and the Seuss area and the Simpsons area. Oh my God, the Simpsons area was so good.
It was amazing. Oh,
this isn't a Simpsons podcast.
But... which please goes rogue.
Which please goes rogue. I love the Simpsons. But like those were broken up with like less themed, like not sort of specific properties, but like those sort of cityscapes. Mm-hmm. So that sort of helped to bridge your movement from mm-hmm. one area to the next so that it did feel like natural. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. sort of the striking, like, and now you exit this and enter this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So day two of Diagon Alley, we spent like a ton of time in Diagon Alley. Mm-hmm. We bought wands on day mm-hmm. one. I bought Tonks' wand.
I bought one of the Ollivander's Creations mm-hmm. wands. And I honestly can't remember if it's Holly or Hazel.
It's impossible to say. I feel like it was Hazel, but...
could be. I took a picture, but yeah. because I took so many pictures, it is lost in my Google Photos.
Somewhere
in there.
But they're both the wands that have the little sort of sensors on the mm-hmm. end that allow you to do the magic in the parks.
That's
so
right.
For those of you who haven't been, we already alluded to this, but for those of you who haven't been, all over the Wizarding World, there are these little sort of brass plaques embedded in the ground that tell you that this is a place where you can do a magic spell. And it tells mm-hmm. you what the spell is and what the wand motion is. Mm-hmm. And pretty much throughout, what you're doing is like pointing into a shop window or like at a prop or something that you can make do something mm-hmm. by doing the correct wand motion. I fucking loved this.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. I
you were very good at it.
Thank you. I waited in line between a lot of small children. I was like, yep, I'm next. Hi, I'm an adult. Let me do this magic. And all of a sudden, here you are living the like Wingardium Leviosa scene where you're like trying to get your wand movement right over and over and over again. And it's not working. It's not working. It's not working. And suddenly it works. And that is the thing. Like if it worked easily the first time, I think it would be less satisfying. I think it would feel more like turning a TV on. It's the like, no, that wasn't it. No, that wasn't it. No, that was, no, that was, oh my God, I just turned lights on. I'm an actual wizard. Jesus fucking Christ. I think that's what makes it like so exciting to do magic with your wands.
Do you remember the one in Nocturne Alley where we had to like point it at a door and it, mm-hmm. oh, and it unlocked the door?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I do. So I had seen a bunch of kids do this and I had seen what happens multiple times.
Yeah.
And then Hannah went to do it and unlocked the door. And then Hannah looked at me and said, well, should we open it? You open it. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. And then I went to open it, but we were too late and had locked again. And so then I did the magic and I unlocked the door. And again, I need to emphasize this. I had already seen like half a dozen children do this. And I went to open the door and it spit steam at me. And I screamed because even though I had seen it like six times, I was so, if you will, immersed in the experience that I forgot what was going to happen. It scared the crap out of me.
It just like... It's such a comparatively simple design thing to like, you just like, you have to move the wand in a particular way, but it felt fucking real, dude.
Yeah.
So we went around and sort of dutifully did like, I think all of the options in Diagon Alley, spent some time in Nocturne Alley, which is where that scary opening door that hissed steam at you was. Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the shop in Nocturne Alley?
Oh, Borgen and Burks.
Yeah, Borgen and Burks.
Borgen and Burks.
Where you could buy like cool stuff and also, unfortunately, a lot of versions of that shrunken head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that racist shrunken head.
Which talks at the bus. So the night bus.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And I think, I can't remember. It was the person at the little souvenir shop beside the night bus who had pointed out to me that you could also get little shrunken heads there. And I said, to be honest, those make me pretty uncomfortable. And she said, better save them for someone else then. And I was like, okay.
Cool. Yeah, I forgot about this, but the night bus, you can line up and have a picture taken in front of it with the sort of Stan Shunpike and the shrunken head, and the shrunken head's another animatronic, and there's obviously a guy somewhere, probably inside the bus, who is like doing the voice of the shrunken head and will interact with the guests and like say their name and make funny comments about people. And it was very uncomfortable.
It was not very cool.
So Nocturne Alley was otherwise great. It was very spooky, and there were fun spooky things you could buy and fun spooky spells you could do. This day two was when we saw the
Celestina Warback? No. Celestina Witchback?
Witchback. Celestina Warbeck. I googled Molly Weasley's favorite singer.
Oh.
Because it was her. Who was like this great sort of crooner character in a very, very beautiful dress with three backup dancers and singers. I very distinctly remember like the show started and you were still getting us drinks, I think. And so I sort of stood and watched and you came over and you like put your hand on my arm and were like, she's black.
Yeah.
Like to see the park create a version of the Wizarding World that is less almost entirely white dominated than the movies are was really wonderful. Including just the employees at the park.
Yeah. And it really like it was this incredible moment of like, this isn't hard. This isn't hard to do.
So fucking easy.
Yeah. I just like I was so she was so good. And I was so enchanted. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, reading the books, again, because they're, you know, more or less from Harry's point of view, it's hard to really see what is enticing about the singer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of framed as a, like schlocky thing that you have to kind of put up with.
Yeah,
in order
like,
to have
like
a family.
Mom music, right?
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, my mom likes this dumb mom music.
Yeah. Yeah. And then being there, I was like, oh my God, she's so talented.
She's so talented and she's so beautiful and she's so glamorous. And it definitely, I was like, oh, there is no way that Molly Weasley doesn't like totally have a crush on Celestina Warbeck. Like, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, Celestina Warbeck was absolutely incredible, mm-hmm. as was the Weasley's Wizarding Weezes shop.
Oh, my God. So it smelled slightly different from the rest of the park.
It did.
It had a, like, particularly...
spicy?
Like, floral kind of spicy scent to it.
Oh, so good.
That I've never wanted to bottle a scent before in my entire life. And
I can still smell it.
Yeah,
like
it was amazing, and I asked, do you have anything that smells like this? And they were like, no, we're sorry. Like, honestly, if they sold scented candles that smelled like that store, I would have given them all of my money.
Uh huh.
Take all of my money. I just want to smell this every day forever.
Yep.
It was incredible. I didn't. Yep. I bought a shirt and didn't want to wash it because it smelled so much like the store. Eventually, it just stunk like me, so I had to wash it.
It's got my own stink in it.
I don't smell very good.
Yeah, I smell lovely. You also smell like spicy roses. Mm. Yeah, it smelled amazing, and everything. It was the place that I came the closest to buying a lot of very silly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Diagon Alley was just full. Like, it was full of stuff to do, and while a lot of those things were sort of monetizable, like you can have the wand experience and then buy a wand, you can go into Weasley's Wizarding Weezes and then buy a thing in there,
mm-hmm.
It still didn't feel like I bought a wand and nothing else, and still had a really wonderful time just like looking at all of the things, like,
yeah,
like because everything is set up well and the shops are like still really lovely and immersive and have other props and stuff in them that aren't just for buying.
Mm-hmm. We tried fire whiskey,
mm-hmm.
and butter beer.
Yep.
And
I had dragon ale.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I tried all of the exciting things. So having really thoroughly and exhaustively looked at everything that there was to look at and experience and touch and smell in Diagon Alley, we hopped back on the Hogwarts Express.
That's right. We went back to Hogwarts.
And it is a different, it's the same sort of like you have to exit back into the London part and then go in through King's Cross. So we got the experience of like lining up at King's Cross, and that was all very cool.
Oh, and the part where you go through platform 9 3/4.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. They've set up this like really cool screen.
So it's so cool. They have this, it's sort of like a trick of mirrors kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
where you walk and I don't even know how to describe it using words. You just walk and you disappear.
Yeah. So it's from like the thing that it's not something that you experience. It's something that other people can see happening. So
that's
when you
right.
are doing it, you are just walking through a doorway. But if you are standing watching people, they've set it up so that you can see everybody walk through the wall.
Yeah.
And you can sort of take pictures and videos of it that work. Yeah. That work very well. Yeah. And we spent a really long time trying to get
God,
a really
so
good
long.
Video of us going through that wall. Yeah, I totally forgot about that part. That was like really exciting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you sort of emerge out the other side and there's the Hogwarts Express waiting for you, steaming and all thrilling,
yeah.
with, you know, owls around, not real owls, obviously, animatronic owls, but owls and piles of luggage sitting around and all of that. And then you get back on the train and you have a different little sort of narrative play out from within your compartment. And then you eventually re-emerge into Hogsmeade.
Mm-hmm. And then we went to Honey Dukes and
yep.
bought a bunch of treats.
Bought some fun Honey Dukes treats. Yeah, so that's where we ended our journey back at Hogsmeade, mm-hmm. purchasing various exciting candies and just making sure that we had seen everything we wanted to see and done every spell that we wanted to do and really just, you know, sucked all the juice out of this experience.
Yeah. I would have spent the rest of my life there if I could have.
I honest to God, like, I think the only thing that I would really like to see changed that would make it possible for me to, like, go and hang out there every single day mm-hmm. is more food options.
Definitely.
Just couldn't eat anything. I was very hungry by the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, and do you remember?
Just hook a sister up with a fucking veggie burger. Come on.
It poured rain mm-hmm. on the second day that we were there. And the upside to this was that it really cleared out the park.
Mm.
And so we were able to go on the Hulk roller coaster.
Yeah.
Ride. We only had to wait 20 minutes, but we spent like 45 minutes getting in and out of line because I kept trying to bring things onto the ride that I wasn't allowed to bring on, like my phone and my wallet. And oh my God.
We had trouble with that, but we did successfully go on the Hulk themed roller coaster, which was very fun.
Very fun.
It was delightful. I think that was the last thing we did
before eating food.
Yeah, I think we sort of did that and then took a quick detour through Seusland or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And then went and got ourselves some goddamn fajitas. And they were a joy. So, so final thoughts on your Wizarding World experience? So final thoughts. Everybody, experience, favorite thing, general takeaway, what you loved, etc.
I mean, personally, it was just really great to spend the day with you two. And
I had heard that after being at Disney, TM, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, also TM, would be less impressive. That, like, Disney is a well-oiled machine in a way that Universal TM is not. And I would say that that's probably true in ways, but it still, like, filled me with joy in a way that happened irrespective of the oiliness of the machine. It was just, like, it was so detailed, and it was so carefully crafted, and it was so clearly designed with the same intention to, like, make you feel like you were there and to make you feel like you were in the world. It's been an emotional 5 days for me in terms of, like, you know, feeling like there's good in the world and that magic is real and there's and there's something about being there with a 2-year-old where they're just like, that's a dragon, like, yes, it is. There's a dragon there. Yeah, like, my favorite part was literally being there, mm-hmm. like being in that space and wishing that I could be there for forever. It was just a very, if you will pardon the phrase, magical experience.
I have had a real rough couple of months, and I was worried. I had been worried in the week leading up to this park visit that I would not be up to it. And I was worried because I have been sleeping badly and I have been really busy and stressed. And then I just organized a conference that ended on Sunday that was a really emotionally intense conference, and then flew a red eye from Vancouver to Orlando that involved me getting like 5 hours of the kind of patchy sleep that you get on a flight, and was like, assumed that I would get here and just be like grumpy and not in the mood. But instead what happened is I like got to go to this really magical place that like totally took me out of everything that has been really shitty for the past couple of months, and was just like, just so delightful and so happy and so, like, not thoughtless and stupid in the way of, like, I'm burnt out, so I'm going to spend this whole day lying on the couch watching shitty TV where, like, you kind of hate yourself at the end of the day, but, like, invigorating. Like, you come out of it feeling like there is good in the world and I feel happy and there's like beautiful stories and beautiful worlds and ideas that I get to share with friends and that make us collectively happy and that bring us closer together. And that's like a really, really nice thing to be reminded of right now when things can feel really dark sometimes. So I expect our check in the mail, Universal Studios, TM. The end. Turning it off.
Oh my God. Final thoughts. Like, I'm so truly, madly, deeply grateful to have gone. It was even better than I thought it was going to be. I went in with I tried to go in with pretty low expectations, mainly because depression mm-hmm. Is real and I had low expectations of everything, including myself. And I just had such a great time. Mm-hmm. It was just so wonderful. Yeah. So I would say if you are thinking about going and you aren't sure if you'll have a good time, go. This ad paid for you by the friends of the Harry Potter Institute. Yeah, it was amazing. You know what? So maybe one thing that sort of lingers with me is I obviously love my child so much. I had a better time there mm-hmm. without him because I think that the Wizarding World of Harry Potter is not well designed for children, for like young children.
There's not a lot to do when you are a toddler, and so mm-hmm. much of the pleasure of the world is the fact that you're there, you know, in the Wizarding World, which if you are not old mm-hmm. enough to have read the books or enjoyed the movies is meaningless to you. So yeah, totally. Definitely sort of an older kid experience, but not so much. Like, I will say if you are an adult and have been holding out on going because you were afraid that it is a thing for kids, no, it is very much a thing mm-hmm. for adults, as you can tell definitely. By the multiple themed alcohols available.
I loved the fact that we could get fire whiskey.
Oh, it was great.
I loved it.
It was great. And you could also, like, the butterbeer is non-alcoholic, but they would put a shot mm-hmm. in it for you if you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, everything about the trip was so remarkably perfect. You know, the people who were there and the experience itself. And in a lot of ways for me, it felt like a really great, like, I know that this is like premature, but it felt like a really great capper to the entire Witch Please experience. Mm-hmm. Like a really nice way to start to sort of, you know, bring this particular chapter of our lives to a conclusion mm-hmm. or a culmination by having this like really, really special trip to always remember and look back on and then go and repeat.
Yeah. Instead of waiting to the end, maybe we should say a really heartfelt and emotional thank you mm-hmm. to everybody who contributed to the GoFundMe.
Yeah. And especially to Katie Robeson for setting it up in the first place and administering it throughout. I mean, it literally would have been impossible for us to go without all of you. And it really was an incredibly special experience.
Literally unforgettable.
Except for the part where we forgot all of the details. But that's just because we're old and our brains aren't good anymore. Thanks, dear listeners, for joining us for season 3, episode 1 of Witch Please. Witch Please Gone Rogue. The rest of our episodes are, as always, available at awitchplease.ca. You can always subscribe on, you know, the things people use to subscribe to podcasts. You can still always find our merch at society6.com/awitchplease or through the link on our website. And one last note on the, you know, the topic of action items. Mm-hmm. We had been talking about starting a Patreon, but now that we have decided to sort of bring this project to a conclusion for the time being, the Patreon doesn't really make sense because it suggests sort mm-hmm. of ongoing production of something. And so we're going to make things super old school and we're just going to throw a donate button up on our website and we'll link to it from our Twitter and our Instagram. And If Witch Please has meant something to you and you would like to throw us $5 or $10 to say thank you for the literally hundreds of hours we have spent making this podcast, that would be really, really great. And all of that money will go towards very good causes like buying us wine.
And chips. And special thanks, as always, to Trevor Chow Fraser, our erstwhile tech support and the robot of our hearts.
Hi, how are you doing?
We will be back in a couple of weeks with another episode, the topic of which we have literally not even figured out yet. But until then,
later, witches!
It was like shittier animatronics, but it would come to life. That word is hard to say when you've had half a bottle of wine. Shitty animatronics. Animatronics.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.